How is the Lutheran teaching about the Lord's Supper distinct from other Christian confessions? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is Lutheranism 101, The Lord's Supper. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101, The Lord's Supper by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Lutheranism 101, The Lord's Supper, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. I was there when I was a little kid, and I really don't remember it. There are pictures. Standing at the edge of this enormous canyon that takes your breath away. And you look at this expanse of empty space, this opening in the earth there, and you say, how did this happen? Now, there's an explanation. Geologists traditionally have an explanation for the Grand Canyon. Does it fit? Is it a big, gigantic, glaring piece of evidence against the idea of creation? Is it proof that geology is, so slow that we can't even see it happening, but it's happening nonetheless? The Grand Canyon. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. On this Wednesday afternoon, the 13th of March, we continue our fourth of a seven-part series on creation. Today, we'll talk about the Grand Canyon and the flood. Dr. Joel Heck will be our guest a little bit later. We'll talk about confessing the Trinity with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. The big news of the day, of course, is the election of Francis I, the brand new pope. And we'll be talking about that with Helen Hull Hitchcock and finding out what we know about the man, what we can expect from the man. And then, there in the second hour of the program, we'll talk about Christians in Argument. Pastor Warren Graff will be our guest. Now, you can join us as well for the next 2 hours of Issues Etc. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. You can send us an email right here in the studio. talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at IssuesETC. Dr. Joel Heck is a regular guest. He's professor of theology at Concordia University, Texas, and author of the book, In the Beginning, God. He'll be one of the speakers at a conference July the 8th through the 10th at Concordia University, Wisconsin, titled The Heavens Declare What Astronomy Can Tell Us About Biblical Creation. Dr. Heck, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be back once again, yes.
What is the textbook explanation for the formation of this amazing geological feature in the American Southwest, the Grand Canyon?
Well, I'm not going to be giving you an exact or precise scientific explanation of it. I'm really a theologian, but I will say that the various layers of sedimentation that form the hundreds of feet of layers in the Grand Canyon were formed above water over hundreds of millions of years. That's a layman's version of it. I'm sure it could be stated much more precisely by others, but that's basically what the typical evolutionary time scheme teaches.
And then the canyon itself is, I take it, simply carved out by the river that currently runs at its bottom?
Yes. The canyon would have been carved very, very slowly based on the whole idea of uniformitarianism, which is a dominant principle in geology, that the present is the key to the past, and the processes that we see going on now would have been responsible for the Grand Canyon being formed over vast ages.
Now, most people who see this accept what they see there, and that is and it's very visible. All the way down, you can see layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of rock, and they tell us accumulated sediment there. That we are watching there essentially proof beyond a shadow of a doubt that the geological timescale as it is normally accepted and taught in all those textbooks exists. That these things, that the old, old Earth is just as old, and there's the proof. We have it sliced like a cake for us to see all the layers. Are there features of the Grand Canyon that defy that explanation?
Oh, absolutely. Numerous features. And I guess I would refer people, first of all, to any one of the typical kinds of photographs that you see of the Grand Canyon. I've got one in front of me, and as I look at that photograph, I got this off of the internet, this one. As I look at that photograph, I see these perfectly flat layers, layer upon layer upon layer, with the river carving out the canyon in their midst. As one looks at the layers, one is surprised, or, well, maybe not surprised. I mean, we've been conditioned to think that this is evidence of evolution, but one should be surprised at how flat these layers are. In other words, if you look at each given layer, and let's say it represents thousands or tens of thousands or millions of years for the accumulation of each layer through these various deposits being laid down, it's quite a surprise to me that there's no evidence of erosion at any level of the Grand Canyon except the top level. So as you look at this side angle and you see lighter layers upon darker layers upon lighter layers and so on, the level of flatness is really remarkable. You would expect there to be jagged edges to not jagged surface up and down, but it's flat all the way across. And scientists have done experiments in huge water tanks on sedimentation, and they have discovered that very flat layers and relatively thin layers are the norm when you have a massive amount of water and rather rapid sedimentation. The whole point is that there wasn't enough time from one layer to the next for erosion to take place, and that's exactly why those layers are so flat one upon the other. Are we to assume that a given layer had no erosion over the thousands or millions of years, that it was the top layer exposed to the sun, the wind, and the rain, and presumably some animal life on top of it? I think the flatness of those layers is an indication that they were laid down very rapidly and laid down by water.
So it just the layers that we see, the actual stuff that often is pointed to as the evidence of the millions upon millions of years, is actually speaks against the notion of millions upon millions of years because of the lack of erosion evident there.
That's how I see it, and that's how a good number of geologists see it. I had the opportunity to converse with a PhD in geology in the Grand Canyon itself this past summer, and he affirmed that, which is something I had heard from another individual who had taught on the Grand Canyon. The flatness of those layers and those numerous layers are indication of rapid sedimentation being laid down by water in a relatively short period of time, over the course of a year or so, which is the length of Noah's flood. That's why I say a year.
What other features of the Grand Canyon speak against its great age and the slowness of its formation?
Well, one of the problems for the evolutionary explanation is that the Colorado River is rolling south about 2,400 feet above sea level within the canyon, and then all of a sudden at its southern edge it takes a 90-degree turn to the west and cuts right through a plateau that is 7,000 to 8,000 feet above sea level. And anyone that knows anything about water, they know that water seeks its own level, that water doesn't run uphill. And so conventional science and an evolutionary explanation of the Grand Canyon can't explain why a river would cut through a plateau that is higher than the water level. It should go around that plateau, especially under a uniformitarian scenario.
Now, when you say uniformitarian scenario, that'll figure into some of the later things we talk about in this conversation. What is it?
Well, that things are happening slowly and gradually over thousands and millions of years, and that we don't have a catastrophe to be able to explain the Grand Canyon or many of the other geological features of the Earth's surface.
To your knowledge, are there any kind of hybrid theories about this where the kind of the classical geological explanation will be, yeah, the sediments were laid down over millions and millions of years, but the canyon itself formed very, very quickly by a great amount of water rushing through those sediments?
Now, I would have to plead ignorance to that question. But the question I thought you were going to ask me was, so what does a person from a flood perspective or a biblical perspective say to explain how it is that the Colorado River took this 90-degree turn to the west and cut directly through the plateau?
What is the explanation for that?
Well, the typical explanation is that following the flood, there were lots of natural lakes that were formed, and one of those lakes that was formed to the east of the Colorado River, and then it was blocked up, and as ice gradually melted or as the weight of the water gradually forced its way to the edge of that lake, eventually that lake burst about where the Little Colorado River flows into the Colorado River at the southern edge before it turns west. And that when that lake burst, it sent a huge volume of water from east to west, and it is what cut through the plateau. You can see if you look at the Grand Canyon in a geological survey or geological representation, you can see that the Grand Canyon does bend a little bit to the south as it goes west, but eventually the force of that water would have cut through this rather porous sedimentary rock, limestone and sandstone particularly, and then eroded it very rapidly with the massive force of the water going from east to west. Okay. So creationists and people that take the flood story seriously and take it literally actually have a very logical explanation for that 90-degree turn to the west through higher piece of land.
Dr. Joel Heck is our guest. This is part four of our seven-part series on creation. Today, the Grand Canyon and the flood. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Joel Heck is our guest. He's professor of theology at Concordia University, Texas, author of the book, In the Beginning, God. He will be one of the speakers at a conference July the 8th through the 10th at Concordia University, Wisconsin, titled The Heavens Declare, What Astronomy Can Tell Us About Biblical Creation. You can find out more about this conference at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. What other features, if any, Dr. Heck, would you find at the Grand Canyon that would speak in favor of a flood model?
I would point people, first of all, to Pete's sandstone, which is a particular type of sandstone that exists all across the North American continent. It covers about 80% of the United States, and since you have the same type of sandstone at the same geological level, it's an indication of a major catastrophe. That sandstone is the very first layer of sandstone above the bedrock in the Grand Canyon. And not only is it true of Tapete's sandstone, but there are several other shales and limestones and sandstones that are widely distributed through North America. And interestingly, the Tapete sandstone is known to exist in many other parts of the world, from southern England and northern Ireland, across Europe to Egypt, Turkey, Kazakhstan, western Australia, and the like. So we have a particular type of sandstone that's widely distributed through the land masses of our world, and indication of a major catastrophe at some point that laid down that type of sandstone at some point in the past.
So it's even a broader picture than just the Grand Canyon, although the Grand Canyon figures into that picture. It is a picture of sedimentation on a continental level.
Oh, yes. Rather remarkable. And very few people know about this, but you can find out a lot of that information online. Somebody could Google worldwide Tapete's sandstone, and Tapete's is spelled T-A-P-E-A-T-S, and we'll find this type of sandstone all over the world. Rather amazing geological feature, but there are other geological features, and one of which I just sort of started to talk about when I said that the Tapete sandstone is so widely distributed. It's also the lowest layer of sedimentary rock above bedrock in the Grand Canyon. And while we were there in the Grand Canyon, we had the opportunity to walk up what's called Blackstone Canyon. And our tour guide took us to bedrock and then pointed out to us the Tapete sandstone that is located right on top of it. And the interesting thing he pointed out is that even in the evolutionary textbooks, the geological textbooks that talk about the Grand Canyon, they talk about this as the great unconformity, which conventional science is unable to explain. The normal kind of geological formations and the geological column is missing 1.1 billion years between the bedrock and the Tapete sandstone. In other words, there's supposed to be several other layers between bedrock and this lowest layer of sedimentary rock that we call Tapete sandstone, but it's not there. And about the only thing that evolutionists can say is, well, 1.1 billion years of history must have washed away. But if that's the case, then why do we have anywhere between 5 million and 70 million years of sedimentation above that, which is the conventional explanation for the formation of the Grand Canyon, even though those layers would go back a whole lot longer than that according to a conventional time scheme.
So just paint a picture for us, if you would, based upon the best possible evidence when it comes to the Grand Canyon. How did the region form geologically? How did the canyon form geologically? Just walk us through it in terms of, as you say, the model of both creation and the biblical flood.
I'm going to be talking in broad generalities because this is the technical answers to your questions are beyond my training and my scope. But since Noah tells us, or Genesis tells us in the seventh chapter of Genesis that all of the land was covered, so that even the highest mountains were covered 15 cubit or about 20 feet. Then after the flood, the waters began to recede where some of the oceanic basins like the Mariana Trench that had previously had a lot of water underneath it collapsed. The various plates of the earth are moving against one another and forming mountainous ranges. And as that's happening, the water is beginning to drain off down into these huge oceanic holes. And so a massive amount of water would have flowed off the North American continent. And much of the rich farmland in the Midwest may well have been laid down after the flood. But when you get to the western United States, or southwestern is where the Grand Canyon is located, near Nevada, where Nevada and New Mexico and Arizona come together, you've got the water flowing to the west-southwest towards the Pacific Ocean. And as it flows that direction, initially most of the surface water runs off, and then rivers begin to form. But then you have these various places where massive lakes were formed, and one of those probably just to the east of the current Grand Canyon. And that's the one that would have burst and cut through the middle of this plateau.
Now, let's talk a little bit about something else you wanted to mention in connection with this, and that is fossil formation. It's not necessarily true of the layers in the Grand Canyon, but there are many places in all over the world where, going down through the geological column, we find fossils. How does the flood and fossil formation, how do those things fit together?
Yes, most people don't realize this or don't think about this, but there are certain conditions that have to be in place in order for a fossil to form. Because if an animal dies on the surface of the land and simply lies there, the sedimentation isn't going to accumulate fast enough to bury it. It's either going to begin to decay very, very quickly, or it's going to be eaten by predatory animals or birds. And so in order for a fossil to be formed, a creature has to be covered completely and very suddenly, and so that there's no possibility of a predator eating that animal, and the oxygen has been cut off so that the animal itself is preserved. And so when you have a fossil formed, it's something that's rather unusual to happen. And particularly when you have literally millions of fossils in great abundance in certain places on our Earth, in our Earth's geology, that's an indication, once again, of a major catastrophe that took place at some point in the past.
I mean, and isn't it true, and I approach this from a layperson's perspective as well, but that we don't find fossils evenly scattered throughout the face of the Earth. We find beds of fossils.
We find beds of fossils, which I think are indications that there were certain places where these animals, as the water is flowing and trapping them, and then the sedimentation is coming down over the top of them, that there were certain places that they were trapped that they simply could not get away. Rather than being a burial ground or where animals went in order to die, it's a geological feature where they got trapped and all of them got buried together. One of the other interesting features of the Grand Canyon is the folded rock layers that you can see in a couple of places in the Grand Canyon. If you look at the rock closely and you find one of these features, you find the layers, the sedimentary layers, flat, and then all of a sudden you have them curving up to the right and then down again, a rather gentle curve. And if you think about that, when the rock was wet, the sedimentary rock was wet, it was able to move without breaking. And so that's another piece of indication that the sedimentary rock was laid down because of a flood, a major water catastrophe, rather than gradually over millions of years, because then the sedimentary rock would have dried out, and any folding of the Earth's surface or up thrust from underneath would have broken it rather than created these gentle curves in the rock's layers.
Dr. Joel Heck is professor of theology at Concordia University, Texas. He's author of the book In the Beginning, God, and he'll be one of the speakers at the conference called The Heavens Declare What Astronomy Can Tell Us About Biblical Creation, July the 8th through the 10th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Dr. Heck, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Next time we'll be talking with Dr. Joel Heck about the attraction of an old Earth theory. When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about what it means to not only rightly understand the doctrine of the Trinity, that is mystery, but mystery revealed, but also how we rightly confess it. It is quite true that you don't find the word Trinity in the Bible. You don't find it there. The teaching is there all over the place, especially in the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament, but it's there all over the Bible, so the teaching is there. How is it that did the doctrine develop? Did the teaching develop? Or did our ability to confess it clearly, which is a different thing, develop? We'll be talking about confessing the Trinity. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico, will be our guest.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Higher Things assists in cultivating, encouraging, and promoting a distinctively Lutheran identity among their youth and young adults. To fulfill this mission, this summer, Higher Things has 3 conferences. You can find out more about these conferences at fromabove2013.org. The winter issue of Higher Things magazine is now available. This is a topical issue on church and state that you can read in its entirety on our website, higherthings.org.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho. Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa. St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa. Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Support. The Issues, etc. 300.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Issues, Etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues, Etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues, etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over 2 centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran Thought, Lutheran Substance, Lutheran Music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.